Catherine by Dave Baldwin.
They never really believed it right from the outset. Well, they can't have done. I mean, nothing really to go on. It was just a stupid rumour started by stupid people. I think that anyone with an ounce of common sense would have realised from the outset, but I suppose that the police can't afford to ignore anything. I mean, I don't think that they had any evidence. Oh, they can't have done, but I suppose they have to follow up every piece of information or so-called lead, no matter how ridiculous it may seem at the time. Well, of course, you can imagine, can't you, if they'd just ignored it and turned out to be true. Wouldn't look really good, would it? I mean, for them, I mean, for the police. First chap who came didn't seem convinced right from the start. He was quite apologetic, kept saying that he had to ask all of these questions because it was normal police procedure. Just sort of went through the motions. I was flabbergasted. Well, anyone would be, wouldn't they? I mean, nice summer evening, I just got home from a day at the office and there it was. A police car right outside the house. I knew straight away. Couldn't be good news. I hadn't won a police force summer raffle. No, a police car is seldom the carrier of good news. And that's when it all started. Probably the worst 2 weeks of my life. I don't think I'm ever going to look at crime and criminals in the same way again. No, that's wrong. Not crime and criminals. It's more basic than that. It's something to do with humanity, the human condition. At the start, I was surprised. Why were they talking to me? I mean, this is ridiculous. They made a big mistake. They're just, I don't know, it all seemed so unreal. Once they'd gone, Andrew and I just sat down to dinner. We talked about it. Even laughed about it, but that was before we knew just what an impact it was going to have on our lives.
Well, the whole thing seemed quite unreal. On that first evening, when the policeman came to ask some questions, I thought that it was just a routine inquiry involving everyone in the neighbourhood. He asked me how long we'd lived in the street and whether we'd made close friends with any of the locals. You know, that sort of thing. It was only when Nigel came home that the questions became more personal. How well did we know certain people? Had we seen them on such and such a date? What sort of car did they drive? I didn't know any of the names he was asking about. Well, apart from Pam and Colin next door. We've lived here for more than 20 years, but we don't know the names of the neighbours. Well, you don't, do you? I know a number of them by appearance, but I have no idea about the names. Nigel asked him what the inquiry was about, but he wouldn't say. He just said that the inquiry was at an early stage and that he was just gathering some background. Well, That made it sound all the more mysterious for me. This is a quiet neighbourhood, and the thought that it could be the scene of some serious crime was quite exciting. When the policeman had gone, Nigel and I had quite a laugh about it. Perhaps someone has stolen the bulb from the new Keep Left sign at the bottom of the road. Or maybe Lavender Close had become the centre of an international spy ring. Oh, the possibilities were endless. Looking back now, it seems quite surreal that we ever laughed about it.
Throughout that first visit, I was convinced that he was going to say her name. He spoke about her husband, Jack, and looked hard at me when he asked whether we knew Jack's wife. He spoke of the lady with the red hair, and Angela said that she had seen her serving in the spa shop. I agreed that I too had seen her. Well, I could hardly deny that, because Angela and I had been to the shop together on a number of occasions. He asked if we'd ever seen her apart from the shop. Angela said no. Then the policeman looked directly at me and said, "How about you, Mr. Collins?" I said that I couldn't recall having seen her elsewhere, but I know he didn't believe me. His searching look stayed on me just a little too long, and I could sense that he was considering asking me again. And then he quite abruptly ended the visit. Picking up his hat, he moved to the door, thanking us for our cooperation, and suggesting that he'd call again when he had a little more background information. I watched as the police car drove away and noted that old Mrs. Coleman from number 14 was at her window, and the Johnsons were observing from their front garden. This was something of an event for sleepy old Lavender Close. Well, whatever this was about, it seemed pretty obvious that Catherine was involved in some way. This could be very awkward, to say the least. And that was on a Tuesday. Tuesday the 21st of June. A date that I'm never likely to forget. The next few days went like a bad dream. I just couldn't concentrate on anything for more than a few minutes before my mind turned to dreadful possibilities. What had happened to prompt this inquiry? Where was Catherine? Was she missing? Was she dead? Was I some sort of suspect? Okay, we were friends. All right, more than just friends, but I mean, that's not a crime, is it? I mean, it may cost me my marriage, but surely not my liberty. I was getting more and more frantic. I decided that I must find out what this is all about. I'll go into the shop. When we'd last met, we agreed that we should just avoid seeing each other, but this is an emergency. Yeah, I decided that a visit to the shop might give me some indication of what had occurred. I decided to go on Saturday morning. When Saturday morning dawned, I felt decidedly nervous at the prospect of entering that shop. I mean, suppose she wasn't there, but husband Jack was. And how much did he know? What would be his attitude to me? I told Angela I was going to the ATM to get some cash. I, I drove the mile or so to the shop, but as I turned the corner to the village high street, I could see a car parked right outside of it. It was a police car. I drove straight on without a glance and drove home. On Sunday evening, I had a phone call from the police. Would I like to go to the station on Monday to answer a few questions? Strangely, I felt some sense of relief. Maybe I was going to discover just what trouble I was in, but anything was better than this dreadful blind terror. When I got to the police station, everyone was very polite and respectful. They wouldn't keep me waiting for long. Would I like a cup of tea? After a few minutes, a young man in civilian clothes introduced himself as Detective Sergeant, well, something or other, and ushered me into an interview room, together with the uniformed PC who had come to the house on Tuesday. The detective explained that they were making inquiries about a missing person, Catherine Thomas. They believed that I might be able to shed some light upon her whereabouts. He then told me that the interview would be recorded, whereupon he switched on the recording machine and identified the three of us before beginning his questioning. He started with a statement rather than a question. He said that they were speaking with me because I was a close friend of Mrs. Thomas. Had they simply asked me if I was her friend, I might have denied it, but to present it as an established fact put me rather off balance. I didn't challenge it. Yes, that was rather clever of them. I wondered just how much more they knew. He knew that we'd last met on the previous Tuesday. Apparently one of the girls who works in the shop had seen Kath getting into my car in the town. Then apparently she went missing on that Sunday evening. Hasn't been seen since. She and husband Jack had had an enormous row on Sunday afternoon. Once the police had learned of my relationship with Catherine, I became suspect number one. For what? What am I suspected of doing? A murder? They questioned me for about an hour. I think half the time they were not looking for answers, just reactions. And the more I tried to register nothing, the more awkward and uncomfortable I became. I even considered the classic no comment. I thought that might be a sign of defence. I don't know what impression I made. They seemed totally disinterested, as if they were just going through the motions. It was after about an hour of seemingly inconsequential chat that I asked them just what they were investigating. Was this a murder or just a missing person? The detective looked me in the eye for what seemed like a minute and said, "Perhaps you can help us with that one, Mr. Collins." Well, of course I couldn't, could I? Even if I wanted to, but when I thought about it later, and I did think about it a lot, when I thought about it, it was pretty obvious that it wasn't just someone who'd had an argument with their husband and left for a few days. No, there had to be more to it than that. Much more.
I thought I knew him. After 30-odd years married to this man, I thought I knew him. I think I did know him, warts and all. I'm sure I did know him. The man I knew so well was Nigel Collins. But the man who came back from the police station that day was someone entirely different. The confident, opinionated, positive and optimistic man I'd lived and loved with all these years was gone. 1 hour with the local police had magically transformed a 56-year-old man out of all recognition. Nigel has always been an open, sociable man. He just loves chatting with people. No matter who or where, he'll chat with anyone. Until that day. He didn't tell me that he'd been requested to go to the police station. He came home from work at the usual time. He seemed withdrawn, preoccupied. I asked him if there was anything wrong, but he just shrugged and went into his study. He was like that for over 2 weeks. 2 weeks of sullen non-communication. I knew there must be something wrong, and a part of me knew that it must have something to do with the disappearance of this woman, but when I mentioned her, he reacted as if he'd forgotten all about her. You mean the woman from the paper shop, he said. Yeah, I wonder if she's turned up. I think that was the longest conversation we had in 2 weeks, but it told me nothing. I began to wonder about his mental health. He'd always been a hard worker, and the demands of his job are high. Is it possible that in middle age, the demands had become a little too much? He was not sleeping well. He'd get up in the middle of the night and wander about the house. What has happened to my husband of 30 years?
Yeah, that interview in the police station was something of a turning point. Up to that point, it all seemed a bit casual. General inquiries. Then suddenly it all became deadly serious. More specific. Where was I on such and such a day? Have I ever driven a blue Ford van? Why was I seen at Foxwell Park? At one point, I was convinced that they were going to question me about my relationship with Kath. Why didn't they? They obviously knew about it. I was tempted to raise the subject myself, to tell them that I'd had an affair with Kath, and on that last Tuesday evening we decided to stop seeing each other, but no, that might sound like some sort of admission. So I kept telling myself that I just put it all to the back of my mind. Answer all of their questions honestly, because I've nothing to hide. Well, there's nothing to hide from them. I don't know how Angela might react to it. Or Kath's husband. He always seemed a meek sort of a chap in the shop, but yeah, things might be very different if he knew that I was having an affair with his wife. But the police aren't interested in that, are they? I mean, they're not concerned with people's morals, are they? They're only interested in crime, and I've nothing to hide there, have I? I keep thinking about the things that were said that Tuesday evening. I mean, this had been coming for some time. We knew it couldn't go on. I mean, nearly 4 months, twice a week. Tuesday evenings I was supposed to be at the Bridge Club, and she went to her drama society. And then Friday evenings were Angela's time for visiting her sister, and Kath's husband would be at the golf club. Yes, ridiculous, isn't it? Just 4 months at 6 hours a week, and we thought we knew everything about each other. We'd made plans for the future, a future when we'd be together. But even as we planned, I'm sure we both knew it was a fantasy. 4 months at 6 hours a week, 100 hours, 4 days. It's nothing, is it? So why is there this gap in my life now? This great yawning gap of emptiness. Why? If it was just a middle-aged fling, I should be relieved that it all ended without a dreadful mess. Yeah, what am I talking about? It is a mess. She's missing. Well, where is she? She had a row with her husband. What was it about? Us? Was it about us, our affair? Does he know? Did he tell the police? Do they know? If so, why haven't they spoken to me about it? They will, I'm sure. They will. But why are they waiting?
I don't know how much longer I can go on like this. I am watching a 30-year-old marriage crumble and fall for no good reason. Like all couples, we've had our rocky times, but we've always been able to talk about our problems, our hopes, our fears, and find a solution. Just by talking, just by airing our views and honestly considering options. This marriage is strong. We're strong. But this is not the man I married. Not the man I've shared everything with for 30-odd years. The mutual trust that holds relationships together is still there, but it gets weaker by the day. How can I trust a man who refuses to talk? And why is he silent? What dark secret is he harbouring?
I wonder when the police will make their next move. Another interview, I suppose. Another hour of pointless questioning. Yeah, perhaps they've got more leads, more sightings. Talk of the devil. Probably them. Hello, Nigel Collins speaking. Kath, where are you?
I'm in London. I'm staying with an old friend.
Why? The police have been hunting for you. Why didn't you tell someone where you were going? I've been interviewed twice. They seem to think that I have something to do with your disappearance.
I'm sorry. But that was not what I wanted. Jack and I had a blazing row, and I just wanted to get away. I'm afraid there were things said that perhaps shouldn't have been said, and the thing got totally out of hand.
Have you spoken with Jack?
No, I'll just go home tomorrow. I thought I'd phone you this evening while Angela was at her sister's.
What was the row about? What was it about us?
No, he doesn't know anything about us. Started because he wants to move house. He wants to take a shop back. back in the hometown of Wakefield.
And you don't want to move?
Certainly not to Wakefield. It's taken us 4 years to be accepted into this community, and now he wants to start again, 200 miles away.
And he doesn't see it that way?
No, no. He asked me what the attraction of this place is. I nearly told him.
Hey, come on, Kath. We talked long and hard about this. I'm sure that we're doing the right thing. And living nearby doesn't make things any easier.
Yeah, I know you're right, but Wakefield?
I'm sure it doesn't have to be Wakefield.
Maybe not. I think he just wants to get away.
Yeah, well, talk about it. He's going to be so relieved to have you back.
Do you think so?
Well, I would be.
I know, but you're not him.
Hey, come on. If you'd known me for 28 years like you've known him, you'd probably choose him every time.
We'll never know, will we?
I'd probably want to live in Bolton or Bradford.
Oh, God, I think I prefer Jack already.
Yeah. So we ought to hang up. She'll be home soon.
Yeah. Well, it was a wonderful interlude. Just too brief.
Maybe it was so wonderful because it was so brief.
Yeah, maybe.
Must go. I think I can hear Angela's car. Goodbye, love. Be happy. Bye. Hi, how's everybody?
Oh, they're all fine. Well, Sheila's got an awful cough, but I think that's down to the fags.
I thought she was supposed to be giving up.
Oh, she's been giving up for the past 10 years.
Yeah, she ought to try hypnotism or something. One of the guys at work went to a hypnotist and he's quit. He'd been a lifelong smoker.
Yeah, well, he probably really wanted to give up. I don't think Sheila does. Oh, and who can blame her, married to Alan?
No, come on, that's not fair. He's a really nice chap.
Yeah, that's the problem. So many really nice chaps are as dull as ditch water, and Alan is no exception. I can never imagine him doing anything that he hasn't very carefully worked out beforehand. I mean, he probably does a risk assessment before going to the lavatory.
Oh, come on, he's not that bad.
Oh, he is. He is the dullest person I know. Safe, but dull. I mean, you can never imagine him speeding or getting drunk or having an affair. Anything that shows that he's as mortal as the rest of us.
I thought they were very happy.
Oh, I'm sure he is. He hasn't got the imagination to be anything else. And I guess Sheila isn't unhappy. Oh, if I spent a fortnight in her shoes, I'd want to scream the place down. But, well, I suppose she just thinks that this is what married life is for everybody. Oh, she used to be such fun when we were younger.
Well, life was so much fun when we were younger. Oh, mind you, it's pretty good now.
Oh, that's good to hear. You wouldn't have said that yesterday.
No, I suppose not.
What's happened this evening?
Haven't?
Yeah. I mean, what has brought back the man I love? A visitor? A phone call?
A phone call. She phoned. Catherine, the missing woman. She's going home tomorrow.
Oh, that is so good. So she's okay? Alive and well?
Yes. Look, I wanted to tell you...
Don't say anything. Welcome back, love. Welcome back. Thank you.
Nigel was played by Dave Baldwin. Angela and Catherine were played by Margaret Baldwin. The theme music tomorrow is from bensound.com.